Yo. The history of Calvos and Damien, as they careen episodically through the radiophonic vagaries of the new music bazaar.
Radiophonic bakeries.
Bakeries, radiophonic what? Bakeries. Why does that come?
Bagelries.
There are those food allusions again.
Start again.
The history of Calvos and Damien as they career episodically through the radiophonic vagaries of the new music bazaar is tangentially akin to that of Cosmas and Damien, the patron saints of physicians and physicians' waiting rooms, whose feast day serendipitously occurs during this festive weekend of planetary misalignment and rice cake shuffleboard tournaments. References to the two are obscure, though we do know that they were twin brothers who lived in the late 3rd century AD, practiced medicine without a license, and never accepted payment for their work. This last bit of economic foolishness stigmatized them as eccentric, and also kept them in constant hot water with the Galen Surgical Guild, whose members relied on fixed rates for medical procedures to maintain their personal comfort zones. For example, who would want to pay 2.5 goats for homeopathic vomit therapy when Cos and Dam would stick their fingers down your throat for free?
For free. Ooh, I'm ready. I mean, you can tell by my voice that it might be in need here, that this throat might need the intercession of Cosmas and Damien, as it were.
If not in need, certainly.
Certainly?
Certainly.
Certainly, Cosmas.
The analgesic altruists, as they were called, gradually were shunned by their colleagues, left off the roster of intramural cadaver wrestling competitions, even, yea, their chariots were vandalized. Music isn't doing a whole lot, is it?
No, no, the music is rather staged. Shall I change it?
Or perhaps
put on something from Fred Ho's The Monkey while you're working on that?
You could mix them. I think they probably would be a proper juxtaposition.
Sure, I'll put on Monkey Meets the Dragon King and Gets a New Weapon.
That's just what we're listening to virtually.
Sure, so let's just go ahead and do that, and I'll just mix them up, and then as soon as you can start again. There, is that better?
Much. Eventually, the hostility had nowhere to go but to their own selves, which, in the year 303, were seized and used to line the leopard cage at the Damascus Zoo. It works, sort of. Sort of a give and take, ebb and non-ebb. Hailing them as martyrs.
Hey, martyrs!
Right. Their former patients turned on the surgical guild and angrily demanded reform, emphasizing their displeasure by organizing the first surgeon softball game, in which trussed-up members of the medical community were used as both bats and balls. Improvements followed swiftly on the heels of the first inning.
Oh, are we getting to a pun? On medicine balls? Did I anticipate?
Please.
Oh.
One anticipates too much.
All right.
No, I wasn't going that direction. But
well,
I certainly can't.
There you are.
Improvements followed swiftly on the heels of the first inning, which reduced the cognitive abilities of 40% of the guild by 50%. Doctors relearned the art of making house calls. Midwives were granted access to anesthetics. Laxatives became available over the counter. Dilantin, belladonna, and atropine once again found their way into the everyday food chain. And a new health maintenance system was devised in which preventative practices were encouraged through the use of hashish, morphine, and opium, or HMO.
Oh, I think I would have preferred medicine balls.
I still may gravitate to that since that met with such
enthusiasm. Just perfect. That's what I needed. How about a little music here?
Medical analogies between Koss and Dam and Cal and Dame are entirely appropriate. Both have a morbid curiosity for things diseased. The sickly patients of the former versus the administrators of public radio of the latter. Both work for free.
Yeah, we work for free.
Though in the case of the latter pair, altruism takes a back seat to bad luck and a stingy and stodgy CPB. And both manifest a predilection for bedpans and rubber gloves that... Oh, never mind.
Rubber ducks.
Ducks. This portion of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, the 71st, i.e. the bazaar itself, not the portion thereof, of which this is the first, or maybe second if you count the introductory motif, is being brought to you in the form of an all-in-one radiophonic laxative, germicide, counteractant, vaccine, and tonic for those other broadcast irritants that frequent the auditory spectrum around us and sometimes precede us. You're welcome.
Thank you.
And now, waiting to say Le Flambeau Orion.
Le Flambeau Orion, yes, I was waiting, I was here, I was ready with my voice on a minute low capacity.
For a reason which shall remain couched in, for lack of a better term, sofas, until no longer I give you the telecommunicable balm of Gilead.
Bonjour, Balm of Gilead. It is so nice to be here once again on the Calvos and Damien show. I have put my voice down in its cellar because, you know...
This is the wine cellar?
No, it's the whimper cellar in this particular case. I think maybe I shall not go out of practice with it. Instead, I shall take myself and hie me to silence. And when I am in silence... it will be good for the ears, because instead of talk, we will play music. What a surprise. Eh?
What a disappointment.
music of Fred Ho, backed up by the Morton Feldman Band.
Yeah. I think they kept up pretty well.
I do, too. What do you got? You got something special you want to play there?
Green thing that
you
I have
You want to play that now?
Time. Not necessarily.
All right, let's do a new release, then we'll play that, and then we'll do another new release. We have some new releases today, and then we have an interview with Marc Battier at our Paris studios.
Which is why you were practicing your
oui,
Frank.
Oui, j'ai pratiqué mon français parce que nous étions à Paris pour parler avec Monsieur Marc Battier. À son studio.
Oui, et l'avion est là-bas.
Et là-bas, oui. Where were we? A thing. We
have
a new thing, a new release from George Spica, who may be a guest on our show. He had originally wanted to be, and for about a year he was just disappeared, and then in the mail comes a cassette and a thing that says, hey, I have more things coming, including a CD. So this is something from a new cassette called The Rhythm of Love, and this is the Ode for Flute, Viola, Cello, and Guitar, and we'll play some of it. George Spica. Well, I guess that was dead giveaway on that particular thing about the electronics.
That rhythm of love, I think, has a perhaps a ways to go. It wasn't exactly getting to my heartstring.
No, I guess not.
Plucked.
Well, it was just called Ode.
Oh.
Ode.
Is that it? O-W-E-D?
Yeah, something like that. For electronic flute, electronic viola, electronic cello, and electronic guitar.
And electronic
it sounds like
composer.
He did all. Yeah, he sounds like he actually did on the same units what we got because of the attack on those electronic celli. Well, that's from Rhythm of Love cassette by George Spica, who may or may not, based on the quality of that, be a guest on our show. I hope this next thing. Well, never mind. We have a classic here. You have brought a classic.
An old LP again.
Oh.
Going back to the LP days. This is our old pal, or maybe someday to be our old pal, Karlheinz Stockhausen, and this is a tune called Ceylon, and it's for all the tea importers of the eastern United States.
Didn't sound like stock hasn't at the end to me.
What it reminded me of is a parade in Disneyland that occurs every Wednesday night called the Main Street Electrical Parade. And there are these floats that have lots of twittering lights around that flash and flicker. And then there's this incessant, insidious, insipid music that accompanies it. And I think I just heard it again. Not that I'm complaining.
I see. Well, that's one of our potential guests, you know.
Walt Disney?
Insipid, indeed, yes. Well, this is a... we started out with the Karlheinz Stockhausen Salon.
Yeah, that got old fast.
What does that?
That was, 26 years ago he went...
1975, I think it said on there, actually.
Right, but he first went into this funky... he was over in Ceylon, of all places.
In Sri Lanka.
That too. Right. And he went into this temple to eat, and he
met Harrison Ford.
I guess he did, and he ever since he's been a changed guy.
Become Indiana Carl, or Stockhausen Indianin.
That would work.
Yes.
Well, go right ahead.
And then we finished off that little. We certainly did finish it off with Christos Hatzis's The Temptation of Saint Anthony. Since it was Saints Cosmas and Damien's Day,
right.
I figured that we could have another saint or two. So there's Saint Anthony. This is Christos Hatzis, who will be our guest on this show this winter.
Oh, well, I beg his pardon.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Us. Oh, well, that's all right. This is he's forgiven because the CD actually was released 2 years ago. So.
He's improved since then.
His beard's grown some.
Oh,
yes.
That's
the
good.
Temptation of St. Anthony from the Byzantium Electroacoustic Music, Musique Electroacoustique. It's from Canada, so it's got to have two languages on it. So we have to have them both. So, and what's next?
ID.
Oh, yes.
ID.
It is WGDR Plainfield. WGDR Plainfield.
Bon.
Bon. And now we're going to our Paris studios to hear the music of Marc Batier.
We had small heated beverages.
Small heated beverages and little sort of toys and stuff. There was stuff around. And
there's some of
there
it
was
now.
Stuff in the background and little noises going. And we were sitting there having cups of, was it tea or was it old coffee?
Old coffee. In
something
it.
Like that. And he turned this stuff on for us to hear in the background, I think trying to avoid the interview.
Which he accomplished exceedingly well.
Pretty well, yeah. Anyway, we'll just sort of turn it. This is the ambiance with which we were surrounded in the studio in the Paris of Marc Batier. Well, that was that. Anyway, I think we're back.
Okay.
Try again.
Harmonic fields from any given material, in this case it's a particular voice that you will hear afterwards, but it could be something else. The piece that I did was for marimba and tape, and the tape was derived from the analysis of a bell, a wooden bell.
Yes, yes, I read about that.
Okay, and it was the same process, basically, actually. From the analysis of the bell, I get pitches, and I can reorganize the pitches to create harmonies. Let me know when you've heard enough.
Let's listen to one more.
Okay.
Yeah, it's coming on soon, I think. Do you hear anything? I think it's happening.
The only thing happening is us.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
On the road in a room of art objects of all kinds, including children's toys and
a whole bank of our fave LPs.
LPs everywhere. Ah. Goodness, what a wonderful studio. We're here in Paris with Marc Battier on the Calvos and Damien New Music Sesquihour. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. And we have just had off mic before anyone else has had the opportunity, a chance to hear some of your music. And I think we should start at the beginning.
Okay. The music you just heard was from a CD called Transparence. Now, this is a rather old project which we realized only last year when the CD came out. Back in 1984, I was in contact with a sound poet, Henri Chopin, who at that time was living in England, and Henri Chopin is really considered the founder of sound poetry, that is, poetry using tape recorders, using recorded sounds to extend the possibilities of vocal expression.
Right.
To go beyond singing and beyond poetry reading, in a way, but using the voice as a material, not for creating music, because sound poets will consider that they are doing poetry. So
right.
It's really
right.
A field which is strange because it uses technical means, but it really wants to remain in the poetry field as
right.
well. So it's a
it's
very
pushing the border
pushing the
back and forth between sound and the music, as expressing the word sound, you know, and pushing that over, and you can hear it as music. As a matter of fact, and we'll hear part of the actual sound poem itself, was very reminiscent of some of the what was called music by Fred Jeschke and his Gruppo in the mid-1960s.
Nuova Consonanza, and all these Italian groups at the time. Yes, I guess you're right. The important aspect in Henri Chopin's work, as in other sound poets' work, is that they are really on the edge of something which is rather hard to define. In this case, it's hard on the edge of poetry and music and performance,
mm-hmm.
because they are using what they are doing in live performances as well. So it's really exciting to walk across borders like this. And the project was at first to use one of Henri Chopin's sound poems that he gave me back in 1984 and create a piece of music with it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
mm-hmm.
that is, start from a material which is already a work, a piece
right.
itself.
It's not already in the sound world.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly, and not any found object, which is the tradition of musique concrète and most of the electroacoustic music. So instead of gathering sounds to try to make music with it, I was at that time interested in the voice, in the vocal expression, and in this case, the work of Chopin is rather wild. It grasps you. It's not something that you listen to as a song or as a singing voice. It's really a live performance of poetry. And so it's a very strong sound. It has a very strong sound reality. Anyway, the starting from that kind of voice was very challenging because it was a work, and at the same time very rich because
yes.
it's a very rich material,
right.
rhythmically and on a timbral level as well. Recently, I was discussing with Ramon Chomata, who is a composer and a producer, and he described to me the idea of sending a collection of CDs of recorded music, gathering an artist and a composer, and to create a work which might be a CD with a book, or maybe starting with a picture or the visual work and having a translation of it into sound
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
some sort. And of course, I described the project I had with Henri Chopin, who is also, by the way, a graphic artist.
Oh, okay, yes.
And but I said, well, let's do it. And this is how the project came into existence.
So that's how the project begins. Now, you then extract part of this and you analyze it. How do you analyze the sound? And how do you develop from that not only the graphic image, but what processes do you use to change that, and how do you make it musical?
Well, the process has to preserve the integrity of the material because you have to respect the fact that you are starting from a work already achieved. Yet, at the same time, you have to make music with it. This is my goal, and you have to find an extrapolation. You have to find a way to derive from this material a whole musical world. And the process I used is the following. I start with a very short excerpt of Chopin's work.
How short is short?
Well, it's between 4 seconds to 20 seconds.
Okay.
So it's really quite short,
clip,
yes,
yeah.
indeed. But in that short amount of time, Chopin has a lot to say already. So it's a very rich material. And I go through a computer which delivers a graphic image from the sound content of this particular excerpt.
And the graphic image is done how? It's the frequency is one position or color, and the time it transcends is another. How does it produce that image?
Well, basically, the image on the computer screen is organized in pixels,
mm-hmm.
which are little dots,
mm-hmm.
and the position of the dot corresponds to a pitch, and the size or the length of the dot, in this case, which might be a line, is equivalent to the duration of that particular component
mm-hmm.
in the sound.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, of course, control a number of things in this translation between sound to image, but basically that's the idea. And you can have colors
mm-hmm.
corresponding to the loudness
right.
of each component, which evolves in time. Now, once you have this image, you can consider it as a score, or you can consider it as a pure image and continue, keep going with other graphic programs to further process the image as you would do with any other picture, in a way. And which I did, using standard picture or image processing programs. By the way, the sound program I used was designed by Vincent Desbrosses, who is a composer and researcher here in France, and it's a non-commercial program, but it's available to composers if they want to. It's a very rich program, and you can do a lot. I will give some more examples later.
Yeah.
Anyway, the once you are in this picture world, you can further process with the goal of doing a resynthesis of the image. That is, the image can become a sound again.
Yes.
But of course, it has been processed, and it's like writing a score. You have the sound in front of you because they are converted into image. So you can process the image in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very exciting because, after all, the idea of using graphic scores is not new.
No,
it's been here for a long time, especially in electronic music, naturally. But it's the first time that you can go back and forth between sound and image, actually, which is very exciting. But also, another possibility is to create a graphic score ex nihilo. You can just start drawing, or you can import into the program what's called a MIDI file, which is, a score which has been composed using a notation program, and you can then write notes, write chords, and how many parts you want, and that is translated into image, and you can further process the image. There's a lot to see on this program.
You're taking an image, and with manipulation of that image, with changing that image, you not only produce another image, which itself is very interesting to look at, as you've shown us, but that translation, that change, that orchestration, if you will, then is transformed once again into sound, producing a new reality.
Yes, so the image can be considered as a score, but in some cases I got carried away, and I must confess, and I just decided to keep going on the graphic level and not try to produce a sound, but just use it as an image. And eventually, when the CD was released, there was an exhibition in a gallery in Paris, in Saint-Germain-des-Prés, for about 6 weeks, where people could listen to the CD, but also could look at the pictures of Henri Chopin and those pictures we just talked about as well.
Okay, let's hear some of this. What's the first one we're going to hear?
Well, I would think the first example could be Walk, which is really a different piece from the others, in the sense that this piece is not derived directly from the analysis and the picture processing, but from a MIDI file based on the pitches which the program found in the voice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear this. This is Walk by Marc Batty. Was Walk by Marc Batty. Give us some more about that particular piece, how that derives. Maybe you can lead us through just this one piece.
In what you just heard, there was a rather strong rhythmic element, which you can find in the original material from Henri Chopin. The sound poem by Henri Chopin is very rhythmic. So I try to respect this. And the rest of the piece is try to create a harmonic field a harmonic world, some harmonies, let's say, which will appear more clearly in other pieces, I guess. But it's really a recomposition of this, those rhythmic aspects. So basically, you can recompose the elements that have been analyzed by the program.
I saw this. This may be not quite relevant to that particular composition, but you had a folder here with the seal of the University of California at San Diego. Did you go there for any reason?
Actually, yes. I spent 2 years at UCSD.
Is this a new hotbed of new music? Because in the past couple of days, we have met a number of composers here that have gone to UCSD. And in fact, this morning, or wherever, whatever it was, radio time, we talked to Sariyaka Hokkaido.
Hey, get it right. Come on.
Yes.
You can do it.
Right.
Kaya Sariyaka.
I knew that. And she, too, had been there. And before that, Mary Oliver, a violinist, had studied there before she came over here to live. So, and before this, I was unaware that there was so much happening at UCSD.
Right. I was there in between 84 and 86. At that time, there wasn't so many places where you could work with the computer on advanced software. Basically, I mean, there were a few, probably more in the States than in Europe, but not so many. And I just happened to be invited to teach at UCSD for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, I developed a computer music lab for the undergraduates, which was a very exciting thing to do because there was the beginning of small systems like, you know, Macintosh arrived pretty much at that time, and IBM PCs and software for personal use. So it was very interesting. And yet at the same time, UCSD, of course, was very advanced in sophisticated processing software and like C music devised by Richard Moore. Gareth Loy was there at that time also. So it was a very exciting place to be at the time, and I guess it still is. People have changed. There are new people there, but it's still, yes, I guess, a very nice place to be, and I go there regularly and go back regularly.
To surf.
Well, I wish I could, yes. I don't have much time for that yet.
Just the opposite of surfing, almost, is a wonderful piece for the evolving tones of the voice. Very long, stretched-out tones. What section is that?
Well, I guess there are a number of pieces which I called landscape, mm-hmm. and there are a number of landscapes on that album, which, by the way, was composed for the medium of CD, for the CD medium.
Yeah, that's an important thing. Let's just sort of break into that question now, because you don't produce this for a concert hall. You produce this for private listening, personal listening. What exactly? Who listens to it? How do they listen to it?
Probably radio listeners.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Because it's the idea of listening to loudspeakers in a private environment is very appealing to me, because the way you perceive the music, the way you listen to the music is different from a concert hall, very different. Concert hall is more like theater, and there's an event taking place. Now, if you listen to a CD in your own home or wherever, but not in a concert situation, then you listen to things differently. You might forget to the sound for a while and then come back to them because something else catches your attention. So it's really a more interactive situation than in a concert where you are focused towards the stage and what's going on. And, oh, by the way, listening to a concert piece with only loudspeakers, it's not so appealing, you know, to the audience. Yeah,
something is lost in the experience because it's written for a different medium.
Right, exactly. So this was an experience in composing music for another kind of listening, and probably radio listening could be described as a paradigm for this activity, actually. But it's also private listening,
yeah.
Whatever.
When our listeners hear this, should they have it through loudspeakers or headphones? Which is best?
It doesn't matter. It's not so much the way you listen to it. It's the situation in which you are when you listen to it, which is important. That is, if you can listen to the whole CD from the beginning to the end, if you wish, and you don't have to sit down and listen to it. You can do something else and come back to it. And sometimes something grabs your attention, or another time it gets lost in the background or whatever. That's the idea of this kind of listening, which I would call them sort of more interactive listening than in the concert situation. And it's possible only with this medium. The sound quality is excellent. It's a digital sound, and so you can sort of respect the quality of the material you begin with. And at the same time, it's something that it's a small object, and it's a difference. It's a very exciting. You know, it's nothing new there, but I think for a composer who works mostly in concert music, it's a new experience. It's something that really deserves to be experienced. And I think in Europe, and I think in the US also, more and more composers are turning towards radio with Hörspiel, for instance, radio plays and pieces for the radio. It's strangely enough, the radio medium is something which changes, at least in Europe, because of the arrival of online systems.
Yes.
And you can now you can use internet to listen to some radio program from Australia wherever you can choose the radio program you want, so you don't have to sit down on your shortwave radio. So the radio system is changing, and yet people, I guess, more and more people in Europe are rediscovering the charm of listening to radio.
That's very nice. That's very nice. You listeners are now rediscovering a charm. Remember that. You are participating in something very new. Now let's listen to the piece that is particularly long extensions of the vocal tone.
Okay.
Which one is that?
Yes, I guess you're referring to a piece called Transparent Landscape.
And you had explained that particular piece stretched the tones of the voice a great deal.
Because the material from Henri Chopin, the basic material, is composed of very short excerpts, very short events,
yes,
I should say, from his voice. He uses the voice as a percussion instrument, in a way. And so one iteration, one small sound fragment can be stretched in time, and I use programs which are able to stretch sounds a huge amount. It's actually a program called Sound Hack.
Oh yes, Sound Hack. Yes.
Yes, by Tom Erb.
Right.
And which is a very efficient program, easy to use, and the sound quality is excellent. And so with this program, I stretched the sound by a factor of maybe 100. Which gives very slow evolving tones, and there is a richness in the material which is short at the beginning that you can't really grab it. But when it's stretched, then you can enter this sound from within, from inside the sound. So it's a very exciting thing. I use the stretching technique quite a lot to create those landscapes. And another program I used is a program which is composed of filters. Filters actually are active on some region of the sound,
right,
from low pitches or medium or high pitches, and those filters resonate. That is, when there's a sound, and the sound tends to resonate, but not as a reverberation,
right?
More as a harp, which is the title of two pieces actually in this city.
And we'll hear some of those. Okay. Right now, more music by Marc Bethier. The way in which you stretch the sounds is reminiscent of the work of another composer we had on the show who did some very beautiful work in stretching sounds, and that was Carl Stone. Do you know Carl Stone's work?
Yes, I do. He's one of my oldest friends.
Ah, so there you are. And, and his sound stretching, was it Xing Qi? Was that the one that had the longest sound stretching on it? A piece called Xing Qi. And he draws the music from one small fragment of a Schubert song sung by a pop singer over a course of about 15 minutes. It's quite wonderful. So then I was reminded right away of how when you begin to pull the sound over that period of time, somehow your own sense of time changes and falls inside that music.
Which may be because, as you know, Carl Stone has a radio program also, so he's a radio man. Once again, this is it. Maybe radio has an influence on the way you do music. Anyway, yes, I don't know this particular piece, but I'm very fond of his work in general, which is very inventive. The idea of stretching a sound when the sound material is rich to begin with is very appealing and very exciting. You can, as a composer, you can discover many things, and as a listener, you can experience, of course, a new way of listening to sounds. Of course, the program has some artifacts. It's not neutral. It creates some effects which you have to either correct or use or further process. In this case, the processing I used after the stretching was the filtering,
yes.
The resonant filters, which technically are called comb filters. But because it tends to, I don't know the word in English, but to smooth out the asperities of the sound while retaining some of it. That is, I was rather interested when I started this project in voices which were, like I said at the beginning, wild or different from singing voices, so which have a lot of roughness in them. Chopin is not a singer; he's a poet, and all those programs tend to smooth out all of this. So you have to also struggle against the program to preserve some of this original strength and roughness, which I liked.
Very different, but using the same base material is your Aeolian harp, particularly the number 2. How do you move into a piece like that? How is that derived?
The idea between this Aeolian harp was to use the material as unchanged, untransformed as possible, and yet to create harmonies and to apply harmonies on this material. So you can hear the original rhythmic aspect of the sound poem, but it becomes music because you can hear chords which change and evolve. And when at the beginning, of course, there was no such thing as chords and harmonies. So and the way the harmonies were done, whereby of course trying to enlarge, it's like a graphic process, to enlarge whatever intervals were in the pitch intervals were in the original material, sort of taking those intervals and blowing them up as much as possible, and of course with resonant filters you can create chords which last, and that creates harmonies. It's what I call harmonic fields, which evolve and change over time. So that's basically the idea, and this is, of course, something which, I don't know if it works in English, but I call this musicalization of speech. It's not new. For instance, in the German studios of Cologne, Herbert Eimert, the founder of the studio, used also, I guess, the same term when he used vocal sounds and made, let's say, musical sounds. So it's also you are on the edge between speech and music. But in this case, of course, the speech is not a speech. It's actually vocal sounds.
Okay, let's hear Aeolien numéro 2, musique de Marc Patier.
why don't we listen to the sky above the port?
Okay, we will in just a second. Right now, that was Auf Alien numéro 2. That was music by Marc Vatier, and we're going to listen to something else and tell us about it.
Well, it was the piece we could listen to was derived from my reading of William Gibson's books. And actually, the title of this piece, The Sky Above the Port, is the first sentence of the Neuromancer.
Oh, yes.
Written in 84.
Right, and the fellow who gave us the word cyberspace and a number of the other important thought currents on the net.
Right, and in this book there is a character, Case, who is a cyberpunk. That is someone who actually lives in a universe between virtual worlds, crime, and survival. It's a rather interesting character and influential in this piece because, again, the music I was trying to create was, there was not such danger as in Case's life, but it was trying to deal with the creation of a virtual world, mm-hmm. Virtual landscape in that particular case, and it was also, I'm not sure about the word in English, but it was on the edge between several kind of music. That is one of the aspects of this of the work I'm trying to do, is not to compose music in a particular style, which would be either, like, say, electronic music, if that's a style. I'm not even sure that's a style. But classical, contemporary classical music, for instance, or right. academic music, or, right. or pop music, or whatever. And I think it's the 90s. In the 90s, we really try to go beyond those limits.
Yes.
Beyond those borders.
Yes.
And try to find try to cross over those waters and try to find a dialogue between people who like various kind of music, and they hardly connect.
As a matter of fact, that's kind of one of the questions to ask, because we spoke to another composer who had been at UCSD and said, out the window were all the surfer boys, and inside here's a composer working diligently on a score for a full orchestra that bears almost no relationship to the lives of these surfer boys. And my question in that case, and to you, is how do you get the surfer boys to listen? What will they hear? Objectively, they'll hear the same sound, but subjectively, how do you draw them into your world?
That's a good question. Well, I have no answer to that. I think nobody has. But it's a fact that the question becomes asked more and more often. So it's a sign that people have to try to connect. The way you get those surf boys into your music, I don't know. But clearly, it's not by ignoring them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably by making a music that belongs to your own world and yet pays attention to the way it's received, the way it's heard, the way people will react to it. So I guess more and more composers are now aware of the social aspect of the music, not the social aspect for their own survival, but the social aspect on the impact of their mm-hmm. music on the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Probably there's more and more awareness. Now, there are all kind of solutions, and I have no particular one, but it's true that this line of CDs, which was started by Raymond Shumata, is along those lines, trying to make music which is not characterized as academic or classical or pop or whatever, but might attract various kind of listeners. As a matter of fact, I'll just give you a brief example from that particular CD. There was a fairly nice review in a very popular magazine for electronic musicians in the popular world, and yesterday I was just being interviewed on France Musique, which is the radio for classical music. So it seems that yes, it somehow works. It's not a CD that is sold very much, but at least I was pleased that such different audience could be interested.
Let's hear that next piece. What is the title of that next section?
That's The Sky Above the Port.
Here it is, music by Marc Patier. The Sky Above the Port by Marc Battier.
Some of our listeners have been following the career of another electroacoustician who apparently also, in fact, studied or claims to have studied at UCSD, and wondered if he was there when you were there. He goes under the name of Yanni. Do you know this alleged musician? He dresses in robes and has long hair and sometimes has laser shows, but he claims to be an electroacoustician.
Yes, I think I've heard the name, and I guess I would I've read his name connected to New Age movement, New Age music.
New Age, or maybe that's true.
Okay, so does he get a yes or a no? Do you think we can consider this a yes, he heard of Yanni, or no, he didn't?
I think we have to give him a yes.
A yes, okay. A yes. Two yeses, seven no's for Yanni. Okay. Yanni, if you're out there, you got some work to do in the electroacoustic world.
Okay. We're not down on Yanni.
No, never, never that. of course, that opens up the side of how does the composer get to this world? I suppose most composers in one form or another start with playing an instrument somewhere along the line and transforming that experience into hearing sounds, or sometimes they're just born composers in a way. How did you get to the stage of creating music using software, extracting the other people's voices and transforming them graphically? How do you get there from wherever you came from?
Well, I was lucky enough to be born in France. And as you know, France is the country which gave birth to musique concrète, which is considered the first kind of electronic music, in a way. So rather young, I became aware of this music, although at that time it was hard to listen to. I mean, there weren't so many records or concerts, but still it was around, and there were many composers, and so I had more chance to encounter this kind of music than in some of the countries, even in Europe. So I guess, yes, I did become interested in that music very early. And
just a kind of off-the-wall question, but what's the first recording that stuck in your mind? I can remember the first one.
Yes,
for me,
definitely the Pierre Henry records. Pierre-Henri, this composer who started Musique Concrète back in 1948 with Pierre Schaeffer, the founder of Musique Concrète, and had many records out. Philips was the company who produced this record. So it was, I guess, the most published electronic music composer at that time. And back in 68, there was an amazing concert, 26 hours of his music, non-stop, in a theater in Paris. So, I mean, 26 hours means it's more than one day. So you leave one day from morning to evening, the night, and morning again, bathing in this music. And that's a rather strong, it's not something you can forget easily.
You were there for the whole time?
I was there for the whole time.
Yes.
At the time, did you think of it as that it worked in this theatrical event, or were you already thinking that maybe this should be recorded and listened to in the privacy of one's own home?
You have to have such events. Absolutely. No question about that. You have to have events as well, because it's so strong. And, of course, there are aspects of electronic music that you can duplicate in your own home, like, for instance, the space. His music were performed on many loudspeakers hanging from the ceiling or from the balconies, and you not only listen to the sound, but you listen to the sound from everywhere, and there is a very strong, of course, aspect in his composition using space, even if he uses mono tapes which were done in monophony at that time. He performs his when he plays, and he performs his sounds, because he knows his music so well that he knows that next sound will arrive here on the left and next sound there and so on. So it's a very exciting process, and of course you have to have those events. So yes, I was already composing music for tape recorders at the time, using very archaic means, but that's the way Musique Concrète started anyway. So I guess as a young man I was duplicating that history 20 years later, actually. And very quickly I became interested in computers. At that time in France there was no way you could create sound with computer. There was no facilities for doing that. Actually, I started to compose music with computers using algorithms. It's only in 74, 75 that microcomputers became available. And then you can connect your microcomputer with a synthesizer.
Yes, absolutely.
And you could keep writing software, and yet you could hear sounds.
Right.
So that was a new step.
And there were, in those early days, there were so many primitive little plug-together interfaces that you could build, and little boards sitting around. Yes.
Exactly.
But now you have very rich sound on this recording. What equipment do you use for that?
Well, I use my home studio, really, basically, because the we have come a full circle, really, because the composers is now able to work at home using software which recently was only available in large institutions like UCSD or UACAM in Paris or other places as well. But those algorithms have now been written for microcomputers or home computers or whatever you call them, small computers.
Yeah.
So they are available.
So your home studio consists of what?
Basically a Macintosh and soundboards.
Yeah.
DAT machine for just remain in the digital domain, and a few outboard gear. Not so much, really. So it's all based on the computer.
Amazing. Back your home studio from the days of composing on the harpsichord or with a harpsichord in a small chamber, back to composing on a small device in your own.
And what's great is that as a composer you can keep actually not only composing the music but also performing the music.
Right.
Because when you do the whole thing, when you do a piece like this, you are also performing its realization. You are also performing the piece itself to record it.
Some more from your CD on the sound poems of Henri Chopin.
Yes, the right after the sky above the port, I guess, we could listen to the Cybernaut's Flight.
Ah, sounds wonderful. Here it is, Cybernaut's Flight by Marc Pathier.
On WGDR, Plainfield.
Cybernaut's Flight by Marc Pathier. Okay, well, this is some wonderful work, and I'd like to ask you, at this stage in your career, you can probably close your eyes and imagine the one point at which you began to be a pioneer in some regard.
Well, I'm closing my eyes, but I still don't see.
Well, close them harder and see if you can identify at least one pioneering act in the art of music.
No, I don't think I can answer that. No.
Ah.
But, no, I don't think I can answer such a question, really, because I don't consider any of my work as a pioneer work. I just followed, there are so many influences now. And I think each composer, and you are a composer, so you can, and you are a composer too, so you can really tell. Each composer wants to create his or her own world, and that's a pioneer within its your own life, I guess. You are trying to create new path in your own life. Because that's the way it is today. Nothing is stable, and you have to create your life. I guess that's what's pioneering.
Create your life, yeah. Yeah.
That's what a pioneer might be today, but that's within one's life realm, within one's span. Sorry for my...
Of course, many pioneers don't know that they are, in fact, pioneers, and the fact that they have pioneered something doesn't occur to people until much later. So you may already have pioneered, and you don't know it, and no one else does yet.
Yeah, I doubt that. I doubt that, yes. Well, anyway, thank you very much. I doubt that, though.
And thank you, Marc Pettier, for joining us on the Calvos and Damien New Music Sesqui Hour. And we have one wonderful piece to close with.
Yes, I would suggest the Landscape in a Dream.
In a Dream. Just a moment's description of landscapes in a dream and where and how you arrived at creating it.
Okay, basically, again, from this very short excerpt of Henri Chopin's poem, I try to present in 2 minutes a series of dream states, which, as in any dream, can change, you know, from one moment to the next. Mm. So it's really a series of states. I don't know how to call it differently. That you go through within this piece.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear it. Thank you, Marc Pettier, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And here are some dream landscapes, Landscape in a Dream by Marc Pettier.
Music that can be your friend.
Yes, very friendly indeed. That's amazing how he created all that stuff out of
thin air.
Henri Chopin's voice. Ah, speaking of voices, it's time for having a second wind here on the show on the Calvos and Damien New Music Now, the Bazaar, even though back in the Paris Time Transport Studio, we were still calling it the Sesqui Hour.
And for good reason, because it didn't fit then either.
It didn't fit then either, no, because that was 1 hour and 7 minutes, so it didn't fit any, 67 minutes, prime number.
Right.
Yes, you have something by Mr. Cuggle here.
Oh, good old piece from the classic album, A Second Wind for Organ, played by David Tudor, who, believe it or not, is 70 years old.
Oh, no, what, David Tudor, the avant-garde madman is 70? What?
The avant-cadre.
Avant-cadre, ooh, playing Cuggle, avant-cuggle.
Improvazione, improvazionietke, aggiute, which is improvisation on...
thrown off, tossed aside.
Right, sure, with just organ.
Thank you.
don't you wish you could get paid to play like that?
I wish I could get paid to play like anything.
I wish I could get paid, period.
Yeah, hey. And the on-air job hunting begins.
It may well. Carlos and Damien looking for employmental options.
In the high-paid field of broadcasting.
Or just receiving funds.
Certainly. Funds are acceptable, always at this phone number.
Also acceptable was that performance of David Tudor on Marzio Cagel's Improvazione something.
I think it's French.
Improvazione.
I think it's Improvazione Ajoutée.
Yeah, that's...
But we could take Improvazione... how would they say that ajoutée? It's ajoutega. I don't know. I don't know my languages enough anymore. I give up. You have chosen something by Ratso Harris for next.
Oh, I don't know why I did that, but the name Ratso just rang in my mind. I thought
it just chewed its way into your mind.
Has left just debris.
Uh-huh.
Rat tart.
A rat tart. So what have we got? Solo something.
It's To Dick Dixon.
Dick Dixon by Ratso Harris.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that what it's called?
That's it.
Did I choose the wrong cut?
Which number?
4.
Solos. Sure, well, try that then.
That
solos.
Was the one we previewed. That was the one that was sort of loud.
Ah, Solos by Ratso Harris. He started off kind of interestingly,
yeah.
And then he sort of lost it.
I find this whole CD remarkably unappealing. This is called, should you want to rush right out and not get it, it's called Act of Finding, music by Bruce Arnold, Tom Buckner, Tom Hamilton, and Ratso B. Harris. I don't know. I don't like that guy's voice that sings in it.
He don't sound like theater. Sound like that old time.
That's theater.
It's a cartoon character.
Anyway, I just can't. It doesn't appeal. Well, it had possibilities.
Well, we don't have to play it ever again.
I guess not.
It's met its match.
Metal Match. Metal Match coming up next in a little while.
Knows.
Yeah. In the meantime, before we play our last piece, we've been concentrating on, by accident actually, electroacoustic music today. We've heard music by Stockhausen and Feldman and Spica and Hatzis and
Is this a
Marc
theme?
Battier. An accidental theme. Accidental electroacoustics.
Ooh.
Electroaccidentalistics. Something like that.
Is it possible to maintain this?
Yes, because the last piece we have is by Carl Stone.
What a remarkable coincidence.
Axis from Camille Barra. Well, first we should say that it's time once again to remind you that the Calvos and Damien website at www.maltedmedia.com is available for your entertainment and enjoyment. We forgot to celebrate. Did we celebrate on the air? We did not. Celebrate 1 year of our website being on the air. It opened on September 16th of 1995.
This is big news.
This is big news because you're supposed to get excited because then you could say something like, well, then what's next for us?
How about grants from all our faithful listeners?
True enough. But really, there's other news. You know, in January, this show goes worldwide.
Ooh, you mean we mail out cassettes to radio stations?
Something like that, but not quite. We are going worldwide on the net. This show is going to start broadcasting live on the internet.
Does that mean
in January?
Then we can include commercial sponsorship.
Probably sponsored by... What would be a good sponsor to have? Something Lithuanian, perhaps.
Or anybody out there with with sponsorship to donate.
You keep sort of leading into the idea that maybe we should get the phone number 454-7762 if you want to help our show go worldwide.
Yeah, if one wanted to fax some fax currency, it's 454-1238, but not for more, not after 5 or 6 minutes from now.
That's right. That's when the Metal Maxes come here, the Matchbox Metallicas. Have we said what we have to say?
Never enough.
Never.
That will have to suffice for now.
Okay. Well. Okay. Look us up on the web. We've got a great site. We have new. Oh, there's a. I added a frequently asked question page.
Who asks the questions?
I asked the question and I gave the answers and they're all up there. So in case you wonder what you're doing when you're there, you get to click that little button and you get answers to all the questions you might have asked.
All right, I'll try.
Remember that, www.maltedmedia.com, and that'll get you to the New Music Bazaar's homepage. And now, music by...
Marc Batier.
No, Carl Stone. Remember the guy who was making leg of lamb or something the night we called?
Stone a la roast beef a la Carl.
That's what it was, roast beef a la Carl. Anyway, this is one of his pieces named once again after a restaurant. Kamiya Bar, but the piece itself is Axis. You want to hit that button over there? We get to hear this tune.
Okay.
Thank you. A production of Baltic Media.